Persigo Press presents the Henry Rios Mysteries Podcast. Hello, this is Michael Nava, author of a series of crime novels featuring Henry Rios, a gay Mexican-American criminal defense lawyer, and the producer of this podcast. Today we present Lay Your Sleeping Head, the first novel in the series. Lay Your Sleeping Head opens in the summer of 1982 in the fictional town of Linden, California, 30 miles south of San Francisco. Linden is the home of the prestigious university of the same name, founded in the 19th century by railroad tycoon Grover Linden. Henry Rios is a public defender, born and raised in a small town in California's Central Valley and from a working-class Mexican-American family. He is a graduate of Linden University and its top-ranked law school. In 1982, there is no internet. People smoke in bars and on airplanes. Most gay men are closeted, and no one has heard of AIDS. It's an America where 83% of the people identify as white, 85% as Christian, and 83% say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once declared that trees cause more pollution than automobiles, is the president of the United States. In episode one, Rios met Hugh Paris, a young gay man being held on drug charges in the Linden jail. Hugh claims he was set up. Rios is skeptical of his story, but their mutual attraction leads both of them to lower their guards during their meeting. That encounter, and a conflict with his supervisor over his drinking, trigger a personal crisis that causes Rios to make a radical decision.
I sat in the conference room alone for a few minutes after the guard took Hugh back to his cell, thinking, what just happened here? I'd interviewed hundreds of inmates, but I'd never given my phone number and address to any of them, or held his hand, and basically told him I wanted to date him. My behavior was unprofessional at best, and at worst, well, sleeping with the client was a one-way ticket to disbarment. Why Hugh? Yeah, he was attractive, but he was also, by his own admission, a drug addict and a ramp boy. Okay, he claimed he was an ex-junkie and former rent boy, but still, the thing is, I didn't care about his history or the consequences of my own behavior. I just wanted to see him again. I was 31 years old. I'd been out of the closet since I was 18, but I'd never have a boyfriend. I couldn't remember the last time I'd gone on a date. I used to have the occasional one-night stand when I needed to scratch the itch. But hooking up with a stranger for a couple of minutes of release didn't appeal to me anymore. Hugh was right. It costs so much to come out that you'd expect to find something more at the end of it than another one-night stand. Those moments with him brought back the longing I remembered for when I'd first come out, when I was still excited and terrified by the beauty and possibilities of other men, when what I wanted the most wasn't sex, but love. I had forgotten that lonely, hopeful boy, buried him beneath my work, tried to buy him off with random hookups, drowned his feelings with booze. My encounter with Hugh reminded me I was still lonely and still hopeful. The feelings embarrassed me, but I couldn't shake them. I didn't know what to do with them either. So I tossed them on the pile of other feelings building up in me like a tower of unread books that would someday come crashing down. Come in.
If you're done here, I need the room.
Yeah, I'm on my way out. It was a bright, balmy summer morning. A fresh, warm wind lifted the tops of the palm trees that lined California Avenue, where I was meeting my friend, Aaron Gold, for our standing Monday morning breakfast date. A couple of kids cycled by with day packs strapped to their shoulders. Summer school students, probably. The Southern Pacific commuter rumbled by, bound for San Francisco. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to get on a train and disappear? Shed this life and start fresh somewhere with someone. And that made me think of Hugh Paris again.
Henry, don't just stand there like a putz. Cross the street. Why were you standing in front of the pet store?
I was thinking.
Not about getting a dog, I hope. Not with the hours you work. If you're gonna kill something, start with a houseplant.
My hours? Do you ever leave your office before midnight? Look at you. You're so white, you're practically transparent.
We can't all be bronze Aztec gods. Some of us have to be pasty Jews with hairy knuckles. Can we eat now? I'm starving. What do you call a busload of lawyers going off a cliff?
I don't know.
A good start.
You tell that joke to the partners at your firm?
I repress my feelings about our profession when I'm practicing it.
Maybe you'd feel differently if you didn't spend your life babysitting rich people for WASP and WASP attorneys at law.
Let me remind you, the firm is called Hanson, Powell, and Ashby, and I work for rich people for the same reason Willie Sutton robbed the banks, because that's where the money is.
You didn't care about money in law school when you didn't have a pot to piss in?
I grew up. Run into anyone I know at the jail?
You don't go to county jail for SEC violations. They send you to a country club federal prison.
Not if you have a good lawyer. Which reminds me, how would you like a job?
I have a job.
And what can I get for you gentlemen this morning?
Denver omelet, sourdough toast for me. Mr. Predictable here wants 2 eggs over easy, 3 strips of bacon, and whole wheat toast, dry. Thanks. You remember back in law school we talked about starting our own firm?
You want to go into practice together?
Well, not exactly. My firm is looking to hire an associate with a criminal law background. I circulated your name. People are impressed.
Why would Hanson, Powell, and Ashby dirty its hands with criminal practice?
You were joking about SEC violations, but you're right. A lot of these regulations carry criminal penalties. Right now, we have to farm out that work. It's lost revenue for the firm. It makes sense to have a small criminal law department. They'd start you at $100,000, and I know that's more than double what you make now. What? Why the sour face? Is it the money? That's just a start.
It's not the money. I was just thinking this morning, I could use a change, and for a minute there, you got me excited. You and me hanging up a shingle together? That I would do. Working for your firm? Forget it.
We'd be working together.
Yeah, with a bunch of Stiffs and Brooks Brothers suits? No, thanks. I'd have to crawl back into the closet to fit in. No way that's happening.
Give it a rest, man.
Give it a rest?
The gay thing, I mean. I'm okay with it, sort of. But I don't understand why you have to shove it in everyone's face all the time.
It's who I am, Gold.
No, it's just who you screw.
Really? You know who Hitler sent off to the camp with the Jews? Homosexuals.
Shut up, Henry, before we get into a real fight.
After all these years we've been friends, you still don't get me.
What I don't get is why you let being gay limit your choices.
Say I come work for your firm. Pretend I'm straight. But then old Hanson or Powell or Ashby finds out I'm gay. What would they do?
That would never happen. I'll protect you.
You mean you'll keep my secret? Admit it, Aaron. If they found out, they'd fire me.
Fine. They'd fire you.
Because in their world, you can't be a good lawyer and a gay man. So, who's imposing limits on me for being gay?
I'm going to assume that's a rhetorical question. Okay, you win. Forget about the firm. I thought it would be fun to work together again. Like back in school when we were moot court partners. We were a good team.
We still are.
Here you go, gentlemen.
How was your morning in the dungeon?
Same old, same old. Well, there was this one guy. The cops arrested him on drug charges outside a gay bar. He claimed he was set up by the guy he went there to meet.
Yeah? What was interesting about him, I mean, besides the fact that he plays for your team?
I don't know. You know, I see a lot of people in trouble. Sometimes one of them gets to me, like Hugh did.
Hugh? Hugh? You're on first name terms with this dirtbag?
He's not a dirtbag. I felt a connection to him. A human connection.
Danger, Will Robinson.
What are you talking about?
I know you, and I know that tone of voice. I hear it when you're about to ride off to the rescue of some felon with a sob story. Human connection. They're clients. You're their lawyer. They get themselves into trouble. You bail them out and send them a bill. Human connection doesn't enter into it.
He was not a client. He didn't want my help. But there's a story there. I wish he would have trusted me with it.
Oh, you're off and running. You know the old saying about whores?
Is this another lawyer joke?
Nope, just a bit of wisdom from the world's oldest profession. When you start coming with the customers, it's time to get out of the business.
Out of the business? It was just before 9 when I got to the PD's office on the 4th floor of the city hall. The reception room was already crammed with clients and their families holding thick packets of court papers criminal defendants generate as they go through the system. They swarmed me. I answered as many questions as I could. Finally, I made it through the door that separated attorneys from clients and headed to the lounge for a final coffee fix. Francis Kelly, the supervising attorney, sat at a table with a daily legal newspaper spread out in front of her. A cigarette burned between her fingers. She raised it to her lips just as the ash fell, sprinkling the lapels of her navy jacket. I almost turned and walked out before she spotted me. She'd been after me for days for a heart-to-heart that I figured could only bring bad news. She looked up from the paper and saw me.
Do you know Roger Chaney?
Not well. He was leaving the office just as I was coming in. Is there something about him in the journal?
Yes. He's being arraigned today in federal court in San Francisco, charged with conspiracy to distribute cocaine.
What? I thought you were going to tell me he'd been appointed to the bench.
With Roger, it could have gone either way. He was brilliant, but reckless. I walked in on him doing a line of coke on his desk one morning, just before he was going to start a multi-defendant murder trial. Do you know what he told me?
No idea.
He said, "Lock the door, Francis." And then he asked me if I wanted a line. Come to my office, Henry. We need to talk. Close the door. You know, what we do here is very tough work. If you can't find a way of leaving it in the office at the end of the day, it can eat away at you. Me, I have a husband, a daughter, and a rose garden. They give me something to go home to.
Why are you telling me this?
I can smell the booze on your breath some mornings when you come in. I worry about one of my lawyers who has nothing better to go home to than a bottle.
I've never come to work drunk.
That's a pretty low bar, wouldn't you agree?
Are you trying to fire me? Because if you are, I want my union rep here.
Fire you? You're one of my best lawyers. I know you'd rather be back at the head office trying murder cases than shuffling papers here, but you're not helping your chances of a transfer with your drinking.
Is that a threat?
Henry, I'm trying to help you. I think you should consider taking some time off and going into treatment.
Treatment? For what?
For the drinking. I talked to Mike. He agrees. Your health insurance.
You talked to the big boss about my drinking? You had no right to do that. If it doesn't affect my job, it's none of your goddamn business what I do on my own time. And by the way, I am not an alcoholic, if that's what you're implying.
Listen to me. Do you think you're the first lawyer I've supervised with a drinking problem? I can see the signs. I know the pattern. Right now, it's just hangovers. Pretty soon, you'll start calling in sick. Eventually, you'll start showing up under the influence, here and in the courtroom. I'm offering you a chance to nip it in the bud before you get into serious trouble.
And if I don't, then what?
Then I'll watch you self-destruct, and at some point, you will give me cause to fire you.
I am not a drunk, and I have work to do. There was a pile of cases on my desk, but I was too pissed off at Frances to work. I couldn't believe she thought I was an alcoholic. I defended alcoholics, and I wasn't anything like them. When I told my crime law professor I wanted to be a defense attorney, she said, "Criminal defense isn't a profession, Henry. It's a religion." When I asked her what she meant, she said, "You have to believe you're serving the cause of justice when everyone else thinks you're defending a deviant who deserves what he gets." Think you can do that, Henry? Think you can keep the faith even when you know your guy is guilty of sin? "Yes," I said, "I know I can." "How can you be sure?" she asked me. "I'm a brown-skinned gay man," I told her. "Most respectable people think I'm a deviant, but I know the truth. There's always more to someone's story than appearances." And I had kept the faith. I defended people guilty of atrocities because I believed if the system didn't work for everyone, it wouldn't work for anyone. Then, Eloy Garza came along, an innocent man accused of a terrible crime. I poured my heart into his defense. When his jury sent him to death row because they couldn't see past his brown skin and tattoos and tough life, something in me snapped. I lost faith. Everything. My career. The criminal law system. All seemed like a sham. Maybe Gold was right. Maybe I'd let myself get too close to the job and it was time to get out of the business. I rolled a piece of paper into my typewriter.
Henry, why aren't you in court? You have arraignments.
Beth's covering for me. I had to talk to you. I'm sorry about earlier. I know you meant well.
Okay. Apology accepted. Is there something else?
Yes. I quit. Here's the letter of resignation, effective immediately.
This is ridiculous. You're going to walk away from your clients, from your career, for what?
For something else.
What else do you want to do with your life?
I don't know. But not this. Not anymore.
You're making a very serious mistake.
Goodbye, Frances. I went back to my office and cleaned out my desk. Just before I left, I called down to the jail to find out about Hugh Paris. The deputy told me he'd been released without charges. I gathered up my personal papers, threw them into a box, and went home.
You've been listening to Lay Your Sleeping Head, a Henry Rios mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, please spread the word on social media. We depend upon your support to keep this series going. For updates and behind-the-scene extras, visit us at our Facebook page, The Henry Rios Mysteries, or at michaelnavawriter.com under the podcast tab. We'd also love to hear from you. Message us on Facebook or email us at persigopress@gmail.com. That's persigopress@gmail.com. This is an abridged version of the novel, Lay Your Sleeping Head. You can buy the complete novel at Amazon. For this episode, our cast was Armando Ray as Henry Rios, Dean Larson as Aaron Gold, and Debbie Durst as Frances Kelly. Our director is Russell Kaltschmidt. Our sound engineer is Dave Peck. Music and sound effects were composed by Josh DeRosa. This episode was written and produced by Michael Nava.